Welcome and thanks for listening to this podcast by Christ United. For more information about our church, visit christislove.org.
You guys have probably had a day pretty similar to the one I had. It's one of those days that it just seems like it's an ordinary day. Nothing new, nothing special really about it. But yet, whenever you get a couple years down the road, you look back and you look back at that day and you're like, man, that was a defining moment in my life. I remember I was only living in Myrtle Beach for about 5 months, but even though I was only here a short time, I was already connected here at Christ United. I was already serving in our Big House Children's Ministry that takes place right before this. And some of my friends on the Big House team, they had asked me, they were like, hey, have you ever been to the Trestle in Conway? And I was like, I've been here for 5 months from Pennsylvania. No, I don't even know what you're talking, where's Conway? And they're like, you've got to go. This place is awesome. And so there were three of the girl dancers on our Big House team, you know, and we went up to the Trestle, and it was a gorgeous summertime afternoon. It was August 11th, 2002. It was a Saturday. And we went up to the Trestle in Conway, and we went in and we sat down to have lunch, and then our waitress came over. And our waitress, I remember exactly what she looked like. She just kind of had on their uniform, black pants, black shirt, blonde hair, put up in a ponytail. She looked good. She looked good. And so she took our drink order and then went back to go get our drinks. And the girls I was with, they said, yo, hey, we have a dare for you. And me being a funny guy, I'm pretty much up for just about anything. So I strategically placed a sugar packet on the ground. Man, you already know what's coming, don't you? And our waitress comes back to give us the drinks. And I reached down. I was like, oh, I think you dropped this. It's got your name on it. Tough crowd today. Okay, yeah. So I remember her reaching down with her left hand, patting my right shoulder, and just saying, oh, that was so sweet. And then she walked back to get the rest of our lunch and everything, and I didn't really think anything of it, cool little laugh. So, and I had a Cajun chicken sandwich. Oh, man, that thing was so good. And then, of course, the ladies I was with had to go to the bathroom all at the same time, because that's just how y'all operate. And they get up and they go to the back corner of the Trestle to go to the bathroom, and I did not know this, but they pull the waitress aside and they start telling her about me, and they're like, oh, he's awesome. And I, you know, when you think about it, they may have had a point, and that wasn't a joke. And they're like, you ought to go out with this guy. And I had no idea they did this. And then we finish our lunch. We get up to leave. And then our waitress, her name's Shannon, she walks up and taps me on the shoulder and says, here's a little gift from the Trestle. And she gave me your number. Yeah. So you know I called that number. That's right. And she ignored me for a week. However, that's another sermon for another day. However, eventually we did start to date. And I remember going through in our early dating, I said, Shannon, you fell for that sugar packet thing? And she was just like, no, that was one of the dumbest things I'd ever heard in my life. She just said, I just thought it was sweet and cute, so you'd give me a bigger tip. Just so you know how the waitresses play y'all, okay? So anyway, we started, I'm not going to give you our whole dating history, but we dated for a while, and then I asked her to marry me. She said yes, we got married, and I'm telling you, we have awesome, beautiful kids, and our marriage is perfect, and it's just great, no problems. And y'all know I'm a liar, don't you? I mean, seriously. I mean, our marriage has had a lot of bumps and bruises along the way. And I'm talking serious ones. And I'm going to be completely open book today, which is normally how I am when I'm up here, because it's the only way I know how to be. Our marriage was really, really rocky. And it's kind of funny, because some of you guys, you see Shannon up here every other week and she sings and just an amazing, beautiful voice. And you guys see me up here every once in a while, and some of you actually like me, and that's cool. I like that. And you will come up to us and be like, oh, you guys, it just seems like you're made for each other and everything is just perfect. And I'm just like, ha, ha, ha. If you only knew. I'm telling you, we were at a point with there was a span of about 6 years in our marriage. We both wanted out. And I mean out. We sat down and we had conversations. We had fights and we had arguments about divorce. How are we splitting everything up? Who's going to get what? We've got two awesome kids. Well, I want full custody because, you know, I can't live without my kids and seeing them. Well, I do too. I'm telling you, it was brutal. those conversations, those arguments, those fights, and they went on for a while. And I will never forget the day it changed. I remember we were in one of those arguments, and we just kind of stopped to take a breath, and I remember looking at Shannon, and I asked her, "Do you want out?" And I'm not sure where she, I love you, baby. She looked at me, and she said, "No." Regardless of everything we had already been talking about, regardless of all the mess, regardless of all the mud and stuff we had been going through, she said no. And I think maybe for the first time ever in our marriage, we decided to put Jesus in the middle of it. And we just decided, look, before we even say that word again, divorce, we will never ever say that again until we have exhausted everything that's out there. Until we've gone at any couple who's had problems that will sit down and have dinner with us, that'll talk to us, we're going to do every one of those dinners. You know what? Anything we can read, we will read. We will start doing this. You know, we're like, hey, you know, we're gonna actually be honest with our life group that we were in at the time. We just say we'll go to counseling. We are going to do everything possible to get Jesus back in the center before we even think of bringing up that word divorce again. So we did all of that. We went to counseling. We read all kinds of books. We were open and honest with our life group. And I'm just going to tell you guys, it doesn't even matter if it's your first time here. If you are not in a group of like-minded believers, in circles, doing life together, I'm telling you, life is hard enough. Why in the world would you want to go through it alone? We were not designed to go through life alone in any way, shape, or form. So it doesn't even matter if it's your first time here. Get connected with our women's ministry if you're a woman. Men's ministry, you know, we have Crossroads for our students, middle and high school. Refuge is our 20-something college. We have like 30-some life groups. Get connected. Shannon and I know what it helped in our marriage and how that helped. And there were many a Friday night that we would sit with our life group, and it literally was all about us. And they sat around, not literally, but they heard us vomit up everything that was going on over and over and over again. Never once did it bother them. In fact, it brought us together like never before, and there was prayer, and there was encouragement, and there was awe. And then we just started reading all kinds of stuff. We decided, hey, we're going to start really focusing on our marriages because we realized, you know what, not all of us have a perfect marriage in our life group. And we started reading all kinds of stuff. We went through books like For Men Only and For Women Only, learning how to try and understand your spouse better. We went through a book called Fight Fair. If you've never done it, even if you're single, you need to do that one to prepare you. Fight Fair by Tim and Joy Downs. Absolutely incredible book. And then one of the other resources that God put in our lives that we went through was a study called Staying in Love, and it was by a pastor named Andy Stanley in Atlanta, Georgia. And it was one that Shannon and I, we've actually gone through multiple times together, and it was just so powerful for us. And I wanted over the next few weeks for us to talk about staying in love. Now, the cool thing about what we're going to be talking about over the next few weeks is this is going to be great for those of you who are married and your marriage is awesome and you didn't think it could get any better. This can help make it better. This is going to be great for those of you who are here and you're married and you know what? You're not really in love. You're just kind of existing together, you know, taped down the middle of the room or something. I mean, this is going to be, and for those of you who are married and you are about ready to call it quits, hanging by a thread, the next few weeks is going to be amazing for you guys. And the group of people I think this is going to be best for is going to be the group of people who could really care less about it. And that is those of you who are single. Those of you who are not married, high school, college age, and you know, you're just kind of not even really thinking about that. I'm telling you right now, I'm just going to warn you, you are not going to be motivated to do anything that we're going to be talking about over the next few weeks. It will never be more beneficial for you guys to put in place what we're going to be talking about, because it is going to be crucial. So as we kind of kick off the series, we're going to start with talking about the Juno question. Now, the Juno question, how many of you, real quick, have seen the movie Juno? Okay, all right, cool. It came out about 7 years ago. It wasn't as many hands as I thought. Whoa, that went way fast. So how many of you have not seen the movie Juno? Whoa. Okay, all right. So because of that, I need to ask the third question. How many of you who haven't seen it plan on seeing it?
All right. Well, I'm about to ruin it for you. I just wanted to see how many tweets and messages I'm going to get this week. The movie Juno is about this teenage girl in high school, and she hooks up with someone in her school, and they're not dating, but they hook up, and she gets pregnant. And so she's got to decide what it is she wants to do. So she goes to an abortion clinic and just decides that's not the route she wants to go. And she decides to have the baby and give the baby up for adoption. And through this process, she gets introduced to this couple who they want to have a baby really, really bad, but they are not able to. So they get together with Juno, and they sit down, and they have a conversation. And they're like, we will take care of all the expenses. We will pay for everything. Can we adopt your baby when your baby's born? And Juno agrees. So as the movie continues, this couple that's going to adopt her baby, they get divorced and split. And Juno, who lives with her dad and stepmom, so her parents were divorced, that was kind of a disaster, she sits down with her father and she asks a really profound question. And she asks it in two different ways. And I think when we hear what Juno asked, I think for you and for me, I think especially, maybe not high school, but definitely if you're 20 years or older, you've probably asked some form of this question. And this is what Juno asked.
I just wonder if, like, two people can stay together for good.
You mean like couples?
Yeah, like people in love.
Are you having boy trouble? Because I gotta be honest, I don't really much approve of you dating in your condition.
That's not what it's about. I need to know that it's possible that two people can stay happy together forever.
I just wonder if two people can stay together for good, like people in love. And then she says, Dad, I just need to know that it's possible for two people to stay happy together forever. Now, you may have not have asked it that particular way, but I'm willing to bet there's a lot of us in here that we've asked that question in some form or fashion. Is it even possible? Because Juno's looking around. She's like, Dad, okay, you and Mom got divorced, so it's not working out so good for you. This couple who wants to adopt my baby, it's not working out too good for them. Is this a pipe dream? Am I shooting for something that's an absolute impossibility? Dad, I just got to know before I go any further, is it even possible for two people to stay in love together forever? And here's the thing, whenever we look around at culture and we look around what stuff's going on around us and all the statistics, we would probably say it's not very probable. I mean, with all the mess in the world, the divorce rate, all that stuff, I mean, when we sit down and we really think about it, it's probably not probable for us to fall in love and stay in love together forever, happily ever after. But here's the thing, I think every single one of us believe it's possible. And we even think it's possible for us, regardless of everything else that we see around going on in the world. I think there's something in most of us that we want to find that one person that we can do life together forever. I mean, it's great to have some softball buddies and some shopping buddies, but I think so many of us, we just have this thing of we want to end life together with somebody. We want that I do when I do, and we want that intimacy, and we want our last days to be in walkers, you know, going down the hallway to the cafeteria and the nursing home. I mean, you know, we want our last dates being like that. We want to be holding hands and they may be shaking, right? But there's something in all this, like, we want that so badly, but yet when you look all around at what we experience and what we see, it doesn't even seem like it's probable. But we all think it's possible, don't we? Now, we do have to spend about 10 seconds talking about what it takes to fall in love, and that's really all it takes, is about 10 seconds, because to fall in love, all you need is a pulse, right? I mean, we fall in love with people, she just does the weather. Oh, I'm so in love with her. You know, he's just in our favorite sitcom or movie. We fall in love. It's so easy to fall in love. In fact, I just Googled this week. In this country alone, there are 2,500 organizations that if you send them their money and a profile, they will connect you with somebody with a similar profile. I would argue it has never been easier ever to fall in love. It's never been easier, but I think you would agree with me. It's never been more difficult to stay in love. But yet, when we really sit down in an honest moment, it's what we all want. And there's several reasons why it's so hard for us to stay in love. One of those is what we've seen growing up. Because honestly, when we think about it, what we've seen growing up, most of us have never seen a healthy marriage. We've never seen a marriage, you know, over long periods of time be so healthy and supportive and great. We've never even seen a good example of that. What we see all through culture when it comes to relationships is really this. Don't we see this? Do unto others as they deserve to be done unto. Yeah, that's a go. How about this one? Do unto others as they do unto you. That's a popular one in our culture. This one's a good one. Do unto others as your mood were to have it. I think we got some guilty people, okay? Do unto others so they see things your way. Do unto others until you wear them down and get your way. Do unto others until you're ready to leave. That's what we see. That's the model that we get all the time in culture and stuff. It's just, hey, you know what? That's why it's so hard to stay in love. What we see is not a good example, but it's just what we are completely surrounded by. Another reason why it's so hard to stay in love is what we felt growing up. Because a bunch of smart people got together and they came up with a list of what it would take for a child to feel growing up in order to, whenever they become an adult, to be ready for a healthy, successful, you know, life-term committed relationship. This is the list of what you need to have felt growing up to be ready for relationships when you get to adulthood. And here's the list. You need to have respect, encouragement, comfort, security, support, acceptance, approval, appreciation, attention, and affection. Sounds like the home you grew up in, right? I mean, because so many of us, we look at this list and we're like, whoa, that's what we need to have felt over long periods of time to be ready to enter adulthood for great relationships? That's the list? And then normally, you know, we're at a deficit when it comes to some of this stuff, and then we enter into a relationship with someone else who also isn't prepared for a good relationship. And it's whenever we kind of get out there into the real world and we start hanging out with people and we start getting into a relationship, it gets to the point where, you know, it starts off with so much emotion. We're talking about emotions next week. You're not going to want to miss that. But it starts with all these emotions. Oh, I love you, baby. And I could stay on the phone with you till 2 a.m., baby. I mean, it's all, man. Yeah, because y'all know we do that, right? I understand the relationships start that way. At some point, it becomes the caboose. It's not the engine forever. And once all that newness stuff wears off, you start looking at the person you're with and you're like, you know what? Are you going to give me respect, encouragement, comfort, security, support, acceptance, approval, appreciation, attention, and affection? Or are you just cute? Or you just have a nice car? I'm just kind of wondering because I'm at a deficit here. I came into this relationship kind of malnutrition when it comes to this stuff because I didn't have all this stuff growing up. And what started as a hug around the neck becomes a stranglehold. You better give me respect, encouragement, comfort, security, support, acceptance, approval, appreciation, attention, and affection because I got to have it. And I'm going to choke it out of you and you're going to choke it out of me. And now I'm just starting to wonder why I don't think you're so cute anymore. And that job, so what? And here's an amazing statistic. This is from the U.S. Census Bureau. Is that 43% of the babies born in this country last year were born into homes where there's no dad. 43%. Now, I'm not making any kind of statements about moms aren't nurturing and loving. Speaking from experience. My parents were divorced when I was 8. I was raised in a single home by my mother, and she poured so much of this list into me. So much of it. I mean, it's just, I was so filled with that stuff. But I'm just going to tell you, and some of you, if you've gone through this, you know this. If you were raised in a single parent home, and you need to have felt all of that list to be ready for a great relationship growing up when you were an adult, and 43% of the babies born in our country will have no meaningful relationship with their dad, they're gonna struggle. And it's not their fault any more than it is your fault. But one of the reasons it's so hard for us to fall or to stay in love is just because of what we felt or what we didn't feel growing up, and we didn't have all this stuff. We had times where dad didn't come home, and mom had addictions, and it was all kinds of, you know, younger son was favored, and so you didn't have as much. So you didn't have all of this list, so you enter into adulthood not prepared for relationships, but we're okay to fall in love. We've got that down. But when it comes to staying in love, it's incredibly difficult. Another reason it's so hard, it's because we have a real low threshold for pain. In other words, it doesn't have to hurt too bad now for us to take our toothbrush and run. I mean, long gone are the days where I do means I do, and we're going to keep on doing whether we like it or not. And, you know, even though you did this and you're not as pretty and things are a little different, and, you know, I'm going to keep on doing because I do, and that's what we do, and we're going to keep on doing because we do. That's what we do, right? Those days are long gone. Now it's just a matter of, wow, you hurt me, I'm gone. And it really leads us into the last thing that really makes it so difficult for us to stay in love is that, and this is what we get from culture all the time, is you chose poorly. So you need to do what? You need to re-choose. You need to pick somebody different. You need to re-choose a different partner, because if one partner's not doing it for you and you know you're not feeling the love and all that, then you need to re-choose and do something. And you just need to keep doing that until you find someone that you were meant to be with. And that's the model that's modeled for us. That's the example of our culture. And this is really what it comes down to. And this is so difficult for you and for me, is that choosing the right person is part of it. But becoming the right person is the other part. There are so many people, I didn't even plan this. If you're in here today and you have been married over 20 years or more, will you stand up, please? Yeah. Awesome. You guys can have a seat. Pick some of these people out. Take them to lunch. I guarantee you, you have a conversation with them. I promise you, some of that conversation will be, there were times along the way I thought I chose the wrong person. There were bumps along the way in which at least one of us wanted out. I guarantee you. And I can tell you that they will also say, I'm so glad we stuck it out. I'm so glad we worked through those difficulties, because it is better now than it ever was before. And if we had given up, we'd have given up what was made for us to be so great now. And we're so glad we stuck it out. And they will tell you that choosing the right person is part of it, but each of them becoming the right person was a huge part of it. And that's something that we get no help from culture. We don't get that. So is it possible for two people to fall in love and stay in love forever? Absolutely, it's possible. Is it probable when you look at all the stuff around? Probably not. But I would think for most of us, we think we're candidates and we would love to see it happen. And in the midst of all of that chaos, Jesus 2,000 years ago speaks. And he gives us the foundation, not just for romantic, intimate relationships, for all relationships. And he gives us the key of all these relationships, and it is huge. If you want to learn how to stay in love, Jesus comes along. He's got all of his disciples around, and he says this to them. He says, a new command I give you. So in other words, guys, you've got the Ten Commandments, you know, the Moses thing back in the day. You've got like 700 Old Testament laws. You have all that stuff. I have a new command for you. Ready? Jesus is about to fix all of our marriages. Here we go. Love one another. You're probably like, ah, Steve, that's it? You should have studied harder, man. Look, Steve, I got him here. Would you work on him? Come on, I want to get the DVD home and send it. Could you, come on, work on him. Love one another is what Jesus tells us to do. Now, here's the thing, and we will miss this if we don't pay attention to it. See, Jesus takes a word we usually use as a noun, and he makes it a verb. He takes this word love, and I understand we use love like a noun all the time, and love is something we fall into like a pool and out of like a high chair. I understand love, we use it like a verb or like a noun, but Jesus is saying, no. I want you to love like a verb. In fact, it's one of the reasons I'm not sure Jesus would be a great marriage counselor, or at least not one that you and I would want to go to. Because we would go in and we would sit down and I'd be like, now, Jesus, my wife, she does this and she does this and she does this. And now you need to tell her what she needs to be doing. And Jesus would look at you or me and he would be like, well, let me ask you something. Are you loving her? No, I don't love her. No. No, you're confusing noun and verb. Are you loving her? And then she would interrupt and be like, now, Jesus, well, I'm glad you said that about him, because he doesn't do this and this and this. And Jesus would look at her and be like, well, let me ask you, are you loving him? No, I don't love him. No. You're confusing noun and verb. Are you loving him? Look, Jesus would say, I'm going to fix your marriage. I want you and I want you. I want you to go home and I want you to love each other. But we don't love each other. Ah, Quit confusing noun and verb. You ought to love each other because you're married. I want you to go home and I want you to love one another. And Jesus gives us the foundation for staying in love. And it's this. The foundation for staying in love is to make love a verb. See, now you'll get it, right? The pause means everything. Now you'll remember this. The foundation for staying in love is making love, pause, a verb. In fact, let's just say that together because it's fun to say in church, right? All right, here we go. The foundation is to pause. Yeah, you guys are good at this. The whole point, if you want to learn how to stay in love forever, it is making love a verb. Jesus commanded us to love one another. It's an action. It's something we do. He says, look, I don't want you to use love like a noun. I want you to use love as a verb. I want you to love, actively love, verb, one another. That's what I want you to do. Now, for some of you, if you're in here today and you're married and it's kind of, oh, what in the world do you mean by that? You're probably wondering, what in the world does that even look like? What does it look like to love like a verb? And for Shannon and I don't know if this will work for you, but it's worked. We started doing this years ago, and it has helped us so much. And I'm going to give you some insight so you don't have to make some of the mistakes we did. But we started asking each other this question. We started asking each other, how can I love you better? Now, I'm going to point this out to the ladies, that if your husband asks you this, don't get mad at him, okay? Because there were some arguments because Shannon just expected me to know. Ladies, I'm going to let you in a little secret. We're idiots, okay? In case you didn't know, I was going to write a book, but it was only two words. It really wasn't going to go anywhere. But we're idiots, okay? We just keep doing what we do, and unless we know something different, we're dumb. We are just going to keep doing the same thing. So if your husband, I don't even care if you got it from service today and you do it today. If your husband comes home today and says, how can I love you better? Smile and tell him. Because he is trying to love you, and he doesn't know how. And he wants to. So you have to take that as an invitation of him reaching out, wanting to love you, because he isn't sure how. And for Shannon and I, it was kind of weird. When we first started this, I went home one day. She was off work before I was, and she normally is. And she was kind of getting dinner ready, and the kids were running around kind of crazy. And I got home, and I was like, Shannon, I was like, how can I love you better? And she was like, the kids are all over my legs. Will you just kind of take the kids, keep them contained for a while so I can finish dinner? I was like, absolutely, babes. So I didn't ask the question again. Every day for like 3 weeks, yeah, you're laughing at me because you know what's coming. Every day for like 3 weeks, I would come home. I would get the kids. We would go on a bike ride. We'd go in the room and play a game. I mean, I just took the kids, and I was like, I'm doing good. No, I'm not. Because guys, in case you don't know about this, women change. Sometimes daily. And I got home, and after 3 weeks, she was getting mad at me. And I was just like, babe, whoa, hold on, time out. 3 weeks ago, you said to love you better, I need to take the kids so you can kind of finish up dinner. That's what I'm doing. She was like, I feel like I haven't seen the kids. Will you handle dinner today? I was like, what? So it was something that we had to make a habit, and we do this at least once a week, and we're just like, how can I love you better? Because I'm just going to warn you guys, your wives will change, and what will speak love to them today might be different tomorrow. So guys, your job is to ask the question and not be, that's not what you told me yesterday. It's okay, and you do it. Now, I know right now the guys are asking the question, well, are the wives supposed to ask me that question? Because we know, guys, how they can love you better. Once again, not a secret. Now, I am gonna let you guys in. Now, this is just for married guys. Everybody else, close your ears. I'm just going to let you guys in on a secret right now, okay? The more you make love a verb, the more you'll make love. But you did not hear that from me, okay? You You did not hear that from me. So how can I love? I'm telling you, it's an action. It's a verb. You have to constantly ask your partner, how can I love you better? Because it could be different from day to day, week to week, but it's an action. It's something you do. And the cool thing about Jesus is he didn't stop there with, hey, I just want you to love one another. He added on to that verse. He said, as I have loved you, so you must love one another. And I thought it was a little crazy what Jesus did, because he started off by saying, a new command I give you. Remember that? And I think if Jesus says command, we just should be doing it automatically, right? But no, because I think Jesus knows who he's dealing with. He's like, let me say this a different way in a couple of words later. So he says, a command I give you, love one another as I have loved you. So you must love one another. In other words, Jesus is saying, when it comes to making love a verb, take your cue from Jesus. You may have had great parents growing up, and they may have been great role models growing up as far as the marriage. But Jesus is saying, not saying you can't take some good stuff from them, but I don't want you taking your cue from your parents or even your in-laws' parents. You know, there's some good stuff in culture about love that you can redeem. It's not all bad, but I don't even want you taking your cues from culture. If you want to learn how to make love a verb, I want you to take your cue from me. In order to stay in love, you have to make love a verb. It's something we have to do consistently. And a few years later, the Apostle Paul comes along, and the Apostle Paul wrote like half of the New Testament. And he comes along, and he says the same thing Jesus did, except he used a bad word. He used a word we don't like very much. Paul comes along, and he says, submit to one another. And we don't like that word. That word submit, that means, you know what? I'm going to take all the priorities for you, I'm going to put above mine. That's what submit means. So Paul is telling, and right after this, Paul goes into how wives should submit to their husbands and how husbands should love their wives. So he goes right into that. Before he gets into that, he was like, look, I want you to submit to one another. That is mutual submission. That means you first, no, you first. It's mutual. And I don't know if you've ever seen that in a marriage. I don't know if you've seen where two people are together and they're just staying in love and they are just mutually submitted to each other. It's beautiful. And it's absolutely powerful. It's not around too much, but if you can find it, man, you need to take them to lunch. It is so powerful when you see two people mutually submitted to one another. Here's why it's so difficult for you and why it's so difficult for me. Somebody has to go first, don't they? And somebody has to go first. And the reason neither person wants to go first is because we're wondering, well, what if they don't? But that's not what Jesus told us to do. And in fact, it's not what Paul says. Paul doesn't say, submit to one another because they deserve it. He doesn't say that. He says, submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. I want you guys to submit to one another, not because of what they've done or what they haven't. No, that's a bad model, bad example. I want you to submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. And that is the foundation for staying in love together forever. And this can be used in all kinds of relationships with your kids, with your coworkers, with you know, classmates. This is so huge for all relationships, but specifically with that relationship that there's that commitment there and no one's going anywhere. We're married. I do. We have to make love a verb. It is something we have to do as an action. So the Juno question for you, is it possible for two people to stay happy together forever? Absolutely it is. Is it probable? I don't know. But it's absolutely possible. And it is absolutely probable if we make love a verb. And if we decide not to take our cues from our parents, and if we don't take our cues from culture, but if we take our cues from someone who loved us the most. It's the verse we all know by heart. For God so the world, he did what? It was the ultimate verb. It was the ultimate action of love. God so loved you and God so loved me that he gave. And as Jesus was here on this earth, he didn't approach all the beating and the floggings and then going to the cross. He didn't go to that saying, you know what? I don't really want to because I'm not sure they'll love me back. In fact, he went through all the torture, all the pain, and the dying on a cross, knowing that some of you wouldn't love him. But he submitted himself for you and for me anyway. So when it comes to our relationships and we're all scared about, man, I don't want to go first, the good news is neither of you going first. Jesus already came and he already showed you the way. He submitted himself for you and for me first. He verbed us in a way that we could never imagine because he loves you and he loves me so much. And you might be in here today and your marriage might be falling apart. And maybe for the first time you're starting to realize, I haven't been making love a verb. Maybe you're in here today and you're not married at all and you're single and you're just wondering why so many of your relationships are just jacked up beyond all belief. Have you been making love a verb? There might be some of you in here today that maybe for the first time ever, you've never loved anybody because you thought nobody ever was going to do it for you first. And maybe today, for the first time in your life, you've realized that your Heavenly Father, who created everything, loved you so much to give his one and only Son to die on a cross for you. Regardless if you love him back or not, he did it. It was the ultimate submission because he loves you so much. We're going to enter into this time where we just have a chance just to respond back to God with however that may look for you. For some of you, it may just be getting together with your spouse. Some of you may be coming down to the altar and just kneeling down and just asking God for forgiveness. Some of you, it may just be asking for wisdom on how to start loving like a verb. And for some of you, it might be for the first time to ask for forgiveness for your sins, to ask for Jesus to come and live inside of you so that way you can start to learn how to love the way he showed you and the way he showed me to love. We just want to open up this time for you to have some time with God. However it is he's pulling on your heart to respond, we encourage you to do so.
Thanks again for listening to this podcast by Christ United. For more information, visit us at christislove.org.